Raise your hand if you're feeling a bit overworked. From SDPB, today is Tuesday, February 18th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we discuss how to establish boundaries with your workload. We head into the classroom with SDPB's Teacher Talk. Boundaries are one way teachers avoid burnout so they can keep loving their jobs year after year. We will touch on boundaries in the school with colleagues, boundaries in the classroom with students, and finally we'll explore how to establish boundaries with the workload itself, with a focus on some pretty helpful lessons and examples for how to set your own limits in order to take care of your own career, even if it's not in education. Gina Benz and Jackie Wilbur are with us. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. This hour, we are wrapping up a three-part series on the topic of boundaries with our Teacher Talk educators. Gina Benz is in her 25th year of teaching in public education. She still loves her job. But like many teachers, she has spotted burnout around the corner throughout her career. Her greatest strategy has been to establish research-based and professionally appropriate boundaries. Well, most Americans struggle with boundaries at time, at work, in families, and increasingly in more abstract areas like media consumption, emotional responses, and workload. So for this Teacher Talk Hour, we have grouped the boundary conversations into three parts: boundaries with students, with colleagues, and at last, with that workload. Jackie Wilbur is a faculty member and director of the Center for Student and Professional Services at the University of South Dakota School of Education. She began her career in public schools in 2007 and has served as a middle and high school teacher and public librarian. She is an experienced registered yoga teacher through Yoga Alliance. Gina Benz is in her 25th year of teaching. She teaches Teacher Pathway and AP English Language at Roosevelt High School in Sioux Falls. She's also on the adjunct faculty at several colleges and universities. She's the recipient of the prestigious Milken Educator Award. Let's get started with some background on boundaries from Gina Benz.
People started talking about boundaries in the 90s. And that's when I first heard about it. But a few years ago, I did some very intentional boundary work with a trusted mentor by reading many things, listening to many podcasts as well, and found that I had some pretty loose and weak boundaries, and that was negatively impacting my own personal and professional life. And I've since made changes and found a whole lot more joy and also prevented myself from getting burned out, especially in my career.
Yeah. As you made those changes, did you get pushback right away for some of the way? Because people are used to dealing with you in a certain way. They're used to these unspoken and unwritten boundaries, and then all of a sudden you're doing something different. How did you handle that that transitional time before things were established again?
I think I didn't get any uncomfortable pushback, but I do think that there was some silent pushback at times. But luckily, I've surrounded myself with a lot of people who are respectful and understand boundaries as well, or were doing the work themselves at the same time. And so we could respect our development of boundaries.
Yeah. Jackie, do you have thoughts on, you know, when you're trying to change, like this practice that I'm doing at work is not working for me. It's causing me to feel resentful. I'm feeling burned out. So I'm going to make these changes. And you do this work. Do you articulate them to people? I am no longer going to be able to stay past this time. Mm-hmm. Or do you just kind of ease into them? Do you have any implementation advice?
One article that I read recently was by Lori Gottlieb. She has a regular column in the New York Times. And she said, when you're setting boundaries, you are not actually trying to push people away. You're making a bid for connection, but a more authentic one. Yeah. And I think for me, that is a really helpful reframe, because rather than feeling like I'm giving people that I used to interact with in a certain way a bunch of new rules about how to interact with me, I'm instead saying, you know, I want this relationship at work to go well. And I want this to be a functioning and healthy professional relationship. And right now, here's where I'm having some challenges. And that's why I'm having this conversation with you. And in my mind, that authenticity and that clarity does make people closer. And that's what I'm trying to articulate when I'm setting boundaries with people, is like, I want this relationship to be a strong one. And here's what I'm going to need, or this is why I'm saying this to you, so that that relationship can be healthy and authentic.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about the importance of them and what they are. And I'm noticing a trend, which is I kind of start framing them as something kind of negative and difficult. Like, you know, here's something that you don't do very well. And then you make a big change and then people push back. And you both are really pivoting it each time to being, no, this is a positive way. This is how we are in relationship with each other all the time. And I really appreciate that. I don't know if that's the journalist in me or if that's like a personal thing. But I hear
boundaries
it.
Are
I hear
challenging.
It happening. Noted.
It is challenging. And it can you can have an internal boundary, which is just within yourself. For instance, I have a internal boundary about how much screen time I will have each day. And that brings me peace with myself, right? We're in relationship with ourselves as well. So I think, though, when you are communicating with others, you can be firm, but you can also be friendly at the same time. Yeah. You don't have to be confrontational. You can be firm and friendly. And that's a mantra I use in the classroom with students. I'm firm and friendly.
And usually if you get to the point where you are feeling confrontational, that might be that you have taken a really long time to get there. You were at the end of your rope.
Yeah.
And now you have to say something, whereas before, if you, you know, say something early, things are going to go much better in that warm demander kind of way that you've talked about before.
That's
so let's
a
talk
great
about
point.
Some of the boundaries with colleagues. This is the first one that you outline in the companion blog, which you can always find at sdpb.org/teachertalk. And this is, do what is yours to do.
Yes.
Gina?
So there's a previous podcast where we said you can't be anybody's savior. You just have to do your part. Realize there's others who will do their part. And as a team, we can make things happen. And so anytime you're working in a team, just do what is yours to do. In the blog, I said, you know, you're not the principal. Maybe the principal wants your input on something, but ultimately it's the principal's decision about a policy or discipline. And you have enough to worry about on your own.
Yeah.
Don't bring that into your mind as well and clutter up your mind. Focus on the things that really are yours to do. Do what is yours to do.
Yeah. Jackie, this is not easy for a teacher like Gina, who's in her 25th year. Mm. It's got to be really hard for a new teacher in their first year.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in my first year, I don't even know the rules.
Right.
I don't know the expectations. How do you coach your young teachers to go out into the classroom with and understand what is theirs to do?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. I think, honestly, the title of your job is the one that you want to stick with. So students are being students, teachers are being teachers, principals are being principals, counselors are being counselors, secretaries are being secretaries, or administrative assistants are being administrative assistants. And that is, I think, an easy delineation. Another one that I'll add, although this conversation is about our relationship to colleagues and boundaries with colleagues, but we're also not parents. And parents are our colleagues and partners in working with students. But I think that's one, especially early on, that at least for me, I don't know about you, Gina, that was something that I needed to check myself on regularly. Because parenting is deeply personal, you know, and so I wouldn't always necessarily agree with how people parent, and they wouldn't agree with my perceptions of how parenting would be done either, right? And so staying out of that lane and recognizing that I'm their teacher, not at all their parent, is really helpful.
For everyone in the workforce, begin with what is your job, you know, think about what your job title is, do that.
Right, right.
And
there's plenty to do there.
There's plenty to do there.
Yeah, whatever your job title is, but
yes, do what is yours to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. All right, Gina, let weaknesses be exposed. Let weaknesses be exposed.
When you love your organization, and I love my school. In fact, today I was at the paper cutter, and another adult in the building said, "You really love your job, don't you?" I do. I love my job, and I love my school. I've been there for 25 years, and I'll probably be there at least another 10. And so when you love your organization, you want to protect it from any mistakes, you know, anything that wouldn't be ideal. But sometimes if you are protecting things constantly, then the weaknesses are never exposed. And so you're putting Band-Aids on something that needs surgery. So while you're doing what is yours to do, be okay with the fact that some weaknesses might be exposed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like the group project, you know, just to take the mindset of the student. When you have a group project, you want the group to succeed, of course. Yeah. But then you also sometimes have to be like, this one person in my group didn't do any of the reading. They didn't prepare anything, right? Yeah. You don't necessarily have to tattle on that, but you don't need to cover for them either.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get a bad grade.
Yeah.
I mean, look honestly, that is, you know, what Gina said about loving an organization, and then I'm going to step up. I have more capacity. I can do more. I can step in and do the things that other people aren't willing to do or aren't available to do. And when the group project thing, the project all got dumped on her, and she did the whole thing, because if I stand back and do nothing, I get a C. And honey, I'm not getting a C.
Absolutely understood.
Of course, I'm all grown up now and I know better. Mm-hmm. But at the time, that's really, really hard. So that goes back to what? Handling the emotions of the fact that things aren't all working out.
Right.
God, am I a perfectionist, Jackie? I hate it when people call me that.
I would never say that about you, Lori, because I know that's your feeling about it.
I hate that when people say you're a perfectionist. But more and more, I'm like, wait a minute, maybe it's me.
Well, to use the language of boundaries, right? Like in this example that Gina's talking about of letting weaknesses exposed, and then I'm making this metaphor of a group project. Yeah. The question is, what am I going to do about this situation, right? I can't control this other person that is not contributing, that's not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and I want to get this grade or I want this project to succeed. What am I going to do about this? And then you have to say that and then do what you said you were going to do. And then I think if you decide I'm going to do all the work for this person because that's what I want to do, then that's okay because that's the boundary you've decided on. But I think what Gina is saying is not letting folks, you know, kind of take that too far where then weaknesses aren't being shown.
I mean, you can't really teach for another teacher.
Correct.
I mean, like, you can't just go into the next classroom. There's ways, committee work, you know, stepping in for other people more than you have to. But at the end of the day, you've got enough to take care of. And so you've got your own class and your own things to manage, right? Mm-hmm. So in some ways, a school is set up to support you in that.
Let me also say, though, that there are many ways that you can save somebody, help them, and do more than is yours to do. And then I think you might be enabling bad behaviors. You might be enabling some unprofessionalism.
Yeah.
And that never turns out well.
No, no. All right. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
Mm-hmm. Have a boundary with your time and who you're spending time with, because in all workplaces, there are people who just don't mesh with your values or your philosophies. We all have different personalities. We all have different philosophies. We just talked about that on our teaching philosophy episode. And if it's going to drain you to be around those folks, just avoid them. Just don't walk past their door. Not because you're mad at them, you're trying to make a point, but just because you're protecting the relationship. You don't want to be sucked into a conversation that's only going to frustrate you.
Right. And that can be familiar energy.
Say
and
more.
And so it can be magnetic. If this is what you know your family dynamic was like, there was a negativity in your family or something, you can be drawn to that in a professional workplace. Yep. And it can be familiar but always damaging too.
Yep. So gossip.
Yeah. Spin. Gossip, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Also, enmeshment.
What is that?
Okay. Enmeshment is so.
Because clearly I don't.
Lori Gottlieb actually talked about this in the same article.
Do
I'm
it,
looking
Jackie.
Back here. She says it's like two trees that grew too close together. And at first it looks like, oh, that's nice. These trees are growing close together, but in actuality, both of them aren't getting all the nutrients they need because mm-hmm. they are too enmeshed.
I love that.
Oh, so good. Well, I'm not really at therapy. It just sounds like occasionally that I am. Set time limits.
My number one thing that has worked for me, and it's an easy, quick fix, is when somebody mm-hmm. knocks on my door during my planning period and says, do you have a minute? I give them exactly how much time I have.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with saying no, but maybe tomorrow. But usually I'll say something like, I'll look at the clock and I'll say, I do have 5 minutes, or yes, I do have 10 minutes. And that way we all know the parameters. We have 10 minutes to talk. And if that person doesn't respect the boundary, then I will just say, this was great. Do we need to continue it another time or something like that?
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Boundaries are about making a bid for connection, only a more authentic one. That's one of the key takeaways from the first segment of the show. We are spending the hour with our Teacher Talk 3-part series on boundaries. We have discussed boundaries with colleagues. Later in the hour, boundaries with the workload. That's the hardest for me, by the way. More on that later. Right now, boundaries with students. Here's Gina Benz.
Boundaries are what you will do in response to something that happens. It's your limit. It's your limit, but it's not you controlling other people or managing other people. It's you managing yourself. And so I can't tell someone, you got to do this. Instead, it's, if you do this, here's what I'm going to do. This will be the consequence of it.
Okay.
And ultimately,
and the other person might not even know. That's your boundary. You might talk about it, but you might not.
Yeah, there has to be a conversation
at some point.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And maybe it's when you realize, oh, I should have a boundary here.
Yeah. Well, you have, for example, if you do not put your clothes in the hamper, I won't wash them. That might be a boundary. And I would say maybe they'll figure that out without me telling.
You know what? One time I did that. Okay. So one time in my family, I stopped washing all clothes that weren't in the hamper, mm-hmm. but I never told anybody.
Yeah.
And my daughter, who was in high school at the time, maybe even middle school, said, that's not fair.
Okay.
That's not fair. You should have let us know.
Okay. You know, she might have a point.
And I was doing a few other things too. Like I was not going to put other people's dishes in the dishwasher.
Sure.
I mean, I was in protest as a mom, right? And I probably should have let people know that I was in protest and what I was protesting.
Okay. So some clarification, and then we'll bring Jackie into the conversation. But boundaries are going to change. Professional boundaries and personal boundaries and boundaries change as children get older.
Yeah.
So it's if your kid's home from college, you might do their laundry that one time because you're just like, what? Or you might not.
An act of love.
Yeah, you might just out of an act of love do some laundry, but
And
they
so,
shift.
Yeah, boundaries can shift. I think about, you know, you have a bedtime for your kids and then you might extend the bedtime, and then you might give choice on the weekends but not school nights, and eventually it moves to a curfew, and then eventually no curfew at all. And so that's the progression. I also want to say that when it comes to children and students, boundaries aren't always an if you do this, I'll do this, because sometimes you know, people who are still developing just need a clear boundary in a different term. So I like to use the word expectation instead in those cases where it's not if you do this, I'll do that situation.
Dr. Wilbur, where do you come at the conversation on boundaries from?
I am a reader of Brené Brown, and I don't have, obviously, any kind of psychology background, which is her area. But she defines boundaries as what is and is not acceptable for me. And so I think that I'm saying the same thing that Gina is saying with just Brené Brown's language. And so I often think, like, with boundaries that I uphold, I have to ask myself first, what is or is not acceptable for me? And then that results in me doing something in response to what someone else has done. So I sort of ask myself that question first, like, is this going to be acceptable or not for myself internally? And then what do I want to do with that when faced with something that I find is not acceptable when someone else does something?
Fantastic. Here's my question. How do you know that it's not acceptable for you?
Yeah, gut check, right? I think that's the interesting thing about boundaries. It would be easier if we all had the same ones, you know, and we would just be able to have a printed list of boundaries in our classroom and everyone would be able to abide by them easily. So I think that's a challenging part. And that's where I've spent a lot of time because similar to our conversation last week about exploring one's own beliefs, I think you have to explore one's own internal boundaries. And so what may or may not be acceptable for me might be different for Gina. And so I'm going to have different responses to people's actions than she is because of our internal boundaries. And mine, I've noticed, have evolved and changed over time as I have.
Yeah.
Here's how I know if I need a boundary. If I start to feel resentful or bitter, then I probably haven't set a boundary and somebody is crossing a boundary that probably should have been set. I'm becoming a pushover. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of boundaries is to preserve relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm becoming bitter and resentful, then that's harming the relationship. And that's why we all have to know about boundaries and be respectful of boundaries so that we can preserve relationships with each other.
All right. So how do you begin to do this work in the classroom, especially if you're coming from a place where maybe you weren't raised with boundaries or maybe you were raised with very rigid boundaries and you would like them to be looser, or, you know, you're starting not from scratch. You're starting in the context of your community culture, your school, your administration, your family life. You bring your whole self to the the table, but it's time to sit and evaluate that. So, Gina, where do you start in figuring out what some of those boundaries must be?
Yeah, I have the advantage of experience. And so people who are just beginning in the profession have a more difficult time with this because they don't know what to anticipate. Yeah. They don't know what's typical of students at this age in this place. But I have experience. And so I think it's important to be proactive.
Okay.
And before the behavior happens, because you know it will, it's happened for 20 years, you say proactively, you know, I expect this. And so for instance, today we had some reading time in teacher pathway class, and I said, I expect phones to be in your backpacks. They knew up front.
Yeah.
And then I said, and if you're on your phone, I have no problem confronting you about it. Okay. So they knew what I would do if they did that. And guess what? They're allowed to make their decisions and then suffer their consequences.
Sure.
Right? You got to let them. Let them make this is a whole boundaries thing. Let people make their decision. And then if they've made that decision, they've also chosen to experience that consequence. Let them.
And if they know what the consequence was, then
that's fair.
Then it's all fair.
It's all fair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie, where do you begin trying to figure out what your boundaries in the classroom should be?
I think that reflection, like Gina said, having experience helps because you can look back on the previous year and ask yourself, where did I find myself in resentment? Where was I upset about the way our relationship was? And what can I do boundary-wise to prevent that from happening again this year? So I think having some experience allows you to have the reflection piece. But I also think you can do that by just reflecting on your previous life experiences and noticing where you start to feel yourself getting frustrated, resentful, or upset. So if people ask you to do things last minute, for instance, if that regularly bothers you in your regular life, it's going to bother you in the classroom too. A late ask for helping out at a school event or something like that. So you could then say, you know what, when I'm getting asked this year to help out with things, I'm going to need at least a week's notice because in my regular life, if people don't ask me early enough, that's something that I will get tripped up on.
Yeah.
So I think if you just do a little self-reflection on how you go through life, you'll be able to make those adjustments for the classroom.
Yeah. I resent being asked to do something months in advance.
There you go.
Last minute I wouldn't want to be asked last minute because I'd want to prepare. But I also, there's a tail end on that. When someone says 3 months from now on this day, will you commit to doing this? Mm-hmm. Unless it's a doctor's appointment, you know, something that you know you can change. But if somebody wants me to do a presentation, I find that I have no idea what's going to be happening 3 months from now. And then they're like, well, we've had you on the calendar for 3 months. Mm-hmm. Now you're backing out on us. That just doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do instead?
I resent it.
Perfect.
I say yes, and then I resent it. Although now I've learned how to get around that and just say, well, you know, if it were tomorrow, would I say yes to this?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'll do that. What's happening is internally I'm saying, maybe 3 months from now I'll have capacity for that. Mm-hmm. I'm very optimistic about how how I will have everything managed in my life 3 months from now, and then 3 months comes and I don't have time. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like I just, oh, now I have to do this thing. And that's something that's happening to me more often in my life, where people are asking me to do something really, really far in advance.
Mm-hmm. With good intentions.
With very good intentions, and I appreciate it. But again, it's not about their intentions. It's about what it brings up in me.
It's the impact.
And it brings up in me a commitment 6 months down the road when I really just don't want a commitment six months down the road.
So I feel like you could say, I'm not able to commit that far in advance.
Right.
If you still want me, ask me when it's 2 months in advance.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work for you, you'll have to find someone else.
Please, you know, have fun finding someone else. That sounds bad. Have fun. I support you
yeah.
in making a different selection. But that's not something that I'm able to commit to so far in advance. Because life happens. I like I value flexibility in my personal time.
You know, and that brings up a good point, too. Sometimes you do have to be flexible in your boundaries.
Yeah.
Now, the whole idea of boundaries is that you hold firm to something. But there are exceptional circumstances.
Right.
So
right.
you are allowed to be flexible during exceptional circumstances.
Right.
Nice. I think you just modeled setting a boundary really well, though, just now, Lori, because you explained a little bit about yourself and how you're feeling and why you are wanting some freedom, or that you don't know if you're going to be able to do it in that amount of time, right? And so I think people can hear that. If you just say, look, I have a hard time making commitments that far out. My schedule varies a lot. I may end up being quite busy in my work or personal life. Could you ask me again a month out? I think people then, you know, there's context. It seems perfectly reasonable. It's very human. And students are the same way. You know, I think sometimes we forget that we're human and they're human, you know, in this classroom, teacher-student dynamic. And so to put some humanity into the boundaries gives the students some context for why you're saying what you're saying and upholding a boundary.
That's good.
Yeah, I think, thank you for that. All right. So again, if this gets hard for you, go back to some of the benefits that when boundaries are healthy, life's just a lot nicer.
It preserves relationships.
It preserves relationships.
And you're not getting all that darkness that comes with resentment and bitterness. And actually that's what creates burnout, right? When you're resentful and you're bitter, you get burned out. So I think boundaries prevent burnout.
Your job could be at stake, because if you get burned out, if you like your job, if you love your job even, and you don't set boundaries, you could just get so tired of it that you walk away from it and then carry that, you know, less optimal functioning to your next job.
Absolutely.
Or to your personal life. Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't learn this growing up.
Oh my gosh, you're so right.
Maybe it was modeled by, you know, you can come up with an example, but, you know, I don't think these conversations about boundaries were happening.
No, I think, you know, there was a...
not in my family.
I think when I was growing up, 70s, 80s, 90s, it was important to serve other people and to... be cooperative,
be a good girl,
pleasing and pleasant, and that was the culture, right? I don't want to place blame on any certain person, but and now I'm learning that you can please everybody else, but then you're hurting yourself, and you might even be enabling other people's bad behaviors.
I think that's the part that helped me with boundaries, particularly in a student-teacher dynamics, because there is a sense sometimes that they may not know where their responsibility begins and mine ends, right, as the teacher. So my job is to educate them and to help them get through the material. But where does that end and their learning responsibility or their homework responsibility or their just self-initiative, where does that begin? And so boundaries, I think, help delineate that by saying, you know, Gina has really good examples here about when assignments get turned in or consequences for behavior, then that says, this is where my responsibility as the teacher is going to end, and here's where yours as the student is going to begin. And I think that's very helpful for people who are developing to know what's theirs and what's the other person's.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. This hour, we are talking with Teacher Talks, Gina Benz, and Jackie Wilbur about boundaries. We've discussed boundaries with colleagues and with students. Next, we will dive into boundaries with the workload. We begin again with Gina Benz.
This mostly applies to older people, because this is a teaching podcast.
Right.
You know, we do have to manage young children to some extent, but we are always working from dependence to independence. So it's about managing yourself and what decisions you will make based on the situation, not how you can make others make certain decisions.
All right. Conversation for a different time. Jackie, have you found this as sort of revealing as I have, Gina's series on boundaries, and have things come up for you?
Always. I feel like I could talk about boundaries once a week. So I think this is right on par with what I like to do in my professional life, and it's been very enlightening for me personally and professionally. Absolutely.
So we've talked about, and you can go to the SDPB Teacher Talk podcast on any podcasting platform, or you can go online and listen, boundaries with colleagues, boundaries with students.
Yes.
And today it's the workload.
Yeah, so it isn't isn't always with others. It's when I say with the workload, really it means with myself.
Yeah. Oh, I want to set that sink in for a minute, because this is the hard one for me.
Mm-hmm. Why is this the hard one?
I don't know. You might have to
let's
tell
explore
me
that.
Because it's with myself. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about what some of your boundaries with your workload are. And then I actually did make a list this time of three
cool
boundaries that I, with my workload, that I have set and keep with a fair amount of regularity. And some of them were hard to come by. And then a couple areas that I'm challenged by. So we'll dig into me in a minute. But first, for teachers in the classroom, Gina, what are some of the boundaries you have set with the workload?
Well, I will go quickly because I want to hear what you said, what you wrote. For me, my number one boundary is with regard to how much I'm going to grade. And I did a lot of research and a lot of work, a lot of practice on reducing the amount of things that I grade. And I think there's a lot of ethicality to that, because we shouldn't grade early learning anyhow.
Right.
However, it's very scary for teachers, and it would have been super scary for me when I was a younger teacher, to remove a huge number of assignments, because graded assignments can be somebody's number one classroom management tool.
Sure.
Right? If you can hold that over someone's head, people will behave a little bit better. When you start to remove assignments, then I suppose the classroom can feel a little bit more chaotic, but, you know, for the cliche, it's controlled chaos.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And chaos isn't probably the right word. But removing assignments, limiting my grading is a huge boundary that has kept me from burning out. It's why I still love this profession after 25 years and plan to be in it for at least another 10.
Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. And that's another reminder of why boundaries matter.
Yeah.
Not just boundaries with, because we talked so much before about, you know, this is to maintain relationships. Mm-hmm. So with your colleagues, that's, we had some really great examples that Jackie had last time we talked about how much better a relationship was if you just say, hey, this is the, you know, I have an appointment at 5 and I need to step away. You're grateful for knowing that. But with the workload, it's with yourself.
Yeah, and my profession.
And your profession, and that's why you're still here after 25 years in the place that you want to be.
And why I'm still happy.
Yeah.
I love being a teacher. I believe public schools, where I've devoted my life to, are a beautiful part of this country. And part of that is because of boundaries.
Well, I want to know more about this. Embrace enough.
Oh.
Because this is one, this is going to be foreshadowing something I don't know when it's enough. I have a hard time defining what is enough.
It's hard.
There's a daily basis. But for teaching, you can always do more.
You can always do more. Students can always grow more. You can always provide more resources. You can always do more for the lesson. You can always give more feedback. You can always do more. And so you have to find a point of peace where you can say, I've done enough, and I can't do more, because then it might wreck that perfect, you know, like equilibrium of doing my job and doing it well, but also still being happy and loving my job and loving it well.
Yeah.
So that's where enough is, and it's not an easy point to find, and
right.
I can't tell somebody where their enough is.
Yeah.
But I like to encourage people and say, enough is enough.
Right. And there's two different ways, Jackie. I mean, enough, going home and collapsing. And that's when I hit my enough. If
yeah.
I've collapsed and I'm just totally beyond capacity, I'm like, well, at least it was enough. But I want what she has having. I'll have what she's having.
I love that movie.
In the fact that you could get enough feels good. Okay, it's enough. Mm-hmm. I want that kind of enough. Do you, what's your relationship with there can always be more? And somehow you have to figure out what is enough on any given day, Jackie.
Yeah, I think that's an ongoing conversation for probably everyone in every profession. But I particularly feel this way in education because learning never stops. There's just truly is endless amount of work to be doing. And so I think for me, I tried to think of it on both ends of enough. Like, what is the minimum amount that I would need to do in order to feel like if nothing else happens today, I've at least done this. And so I think every teacher needs to ask that for themselves. Like, is it creating a sense of comfort and safety and an ability to learn? And if that's all that happens in my classroom today, that's enough, right? Mm. So kind of this on one end, the minimum that you can feel okay with. And then on the other end, the maximum. So not letting myself get to the point of sheer exhaustion, which I'm terrible at, so we shouldn't probably listen to my advice on this end, but saying, when can I feel like it's enough and not have to push over? So I think maybe finding a continuum is what I'm trying to say, and then knowing that every day is variable, too, and we can swing back and forth between the min and the max.
Gina, why do new teachers push beyond what is enough to the next thing?
First of all, it takes time to figure out what is enough. It takes time to figure out students and how far you can push them and all of those things. But also they're trying to prove themselves, especially among their colleagues.
And to themselves.
And to, good. Yeah, yeah. And so that's why that's the power of mentors, which we've certainly talked about before.
Yeah. So if a new teacher comes to you, Gina, and says, I'm taking home... You know, I'm taking home all these grades. I'm taking on this homework. I'm burned out. I'm just starting, and I don't know how I'm going to survive this long term. Where would you start looking for places to define some boundaries? Because we also, none of us want to be the kind of person or really work with or have your student in the classroom of somebody who doesn't do enough, who is, you know, who says, I have boundaries, and then they leave early and don't get their jobs done. So you want a conscientious, high-achieving teacher, and you want to be that.
Let's just start with grades since I brought that up already.
Yeah.
You could look at all of the assignments and just start with, you know, any random number. Say, what are the 10 most essential assignments you have on this long list of assignments? And if we have to change it to 15, whatever the number needs to be.
Yeah.
It's not good to look at it assignment by assignment and say, is this essential or not? Is this one essential or not? You just got to say the limit. Here's the limit, 15. Which ones are most important? And then all the other assignments that you would be not grading, students should still do. That practice still needs to happen, but it doesn't all have to be graded. Students can receive their own feedback from themselves. So for instance, they could write a paragraph, and then you could provide them a paragraph that is exemplary, an average paragraph, and then a paragraph that needs work. And then they have to look at which one does their paragraph match closer to. And then they could do a little reflection on that.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, when it's not writing, you could just provide an answer key or a rubric of some sort so the students can evaluate themselves, which is actually a really important part of education. Research shows that helps students grow by showing them how to evaluate themselves.
Research-based boundaries with the workload.
Yeah, there you go.
There is the ideal right there.
Yeah,
it's not just about how you feel. It's about what the research shows is good for the students.
Mm-hmm. to develop their own feedback for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's a little bit of extra work for the teacher to put those, put it in place for that to happen, but then it runs itself. Also, if students are going to do practice in the room, but you're not going to collect it and grade it, then you walk around constantly and make sure it's happening and you monitor it. Yeah. And as long as you have routines and rapport with the students, they'll do that for you.
Yeah.
If you haven't developed rapport, they might not do it.
Here's one more on your list. Sometimes you only need to plant the seed when you have an idea. Others can water it if it needs to grow.
You know, I'm probably putting myself in a vulnerable position because everything here is something I did wrong early in my career, where I wanted to be the champion and I wanted to make things happen. I wanted to champion every cause.
Yeah.
And I've learned that I can only champion maybe two, maybe three causes at a time. For instance, I champion grading reform. I like to champion the emphasis of teaching soft skills in a classroom and having social interactions, not staring, as opposed to staring at a computer screen.
Yep.
Those are the two biggest things I've been championing lately. What I won't do, and I'll leave for somebody else, is our issues regarding curriculum.
Sure.
Or, you know, like school vouchers, you know, something like that. Other people can do that one. Right. I can't champion everything. I could plant a seed about it, but I don't have to see it grow.
Yeah. Jackie, what are some tried and true boundaries that you have established? What comes to mind when you think about your own?
With the workload. I think that the start of this conversation about how this is with ourselves is one of the key components for me. My biggest struggle with boundaries is the internal nature of them, right? It's fairly easy for me to do the external work of boundaries of saying, hey, you know, I have an appointment at this time, and then I'm going to need to end our conversation at this time so I can go to that appointment. But then when it comes to being that time, I have to actually do that then, right? Yeah. Where I have to get up and say, I really do have to leave now.
I love this example. That happens here all the time. I'll put it on my calendar. Every producer, everybody in the building is like, Lori, you have to go. And I'm like, yeah, thanks. And then I'm late.
Often won't even be, I'm using it as an example that I'm in communication with someone, but oftentimes it's me working on something and I won't stop myself from working on something so that I can leave and be on time for my other things.
Yeah.
So we are one in the same there. So, all of these conversations are about me being able to monitor my own internal feelings. And I've really worked a lot on stress management and knowing my own cues for when I'm getting stressed. And I'm getting better over time about recognizing those cues and honoring the boundaries that are talking to me. You know, I'm breathing in a more shallow way. I'm thirsty. I'm feeling a little bit more racing thoughts. Those kinds of things that'll happen when I'm in a state of stress. And if we're talking about research-based boundaries, I mean, being in a state of stress is not the optimal brain space, physical space to be in if you're trying to work with young people, if you're trying to do intellectual pursuits. It's really better to be in a more relaxed space if you're trying to do any kind of thinking or deep learning. And so I use that as a rationale for myself as to why it's important that I stay out of too much stress. And that's the main reason for me to be conscientious of my workload, is that if I'm not, I will get quite stressed.
I love that.
That was concrete advice right there.
Yeah. And again, research-based. Yeah. All right. So I wrote down a couple things that I do in this job that are kind of funny and weird boundaries. But
I'm sitting on the edge of my chair, literally.
I'm excited, too.
And I've been doing this 9 years now, but a very important one to me is if I need to take time away because I have vacation or because I'm ill or there's, a funeral or something, I never make that decision based on who's going to be on the show. Because there was a time when it was like, you have to show up for so-and-so, or there's a big interview and you don't want to ask for someone to substitute. I would push through any illness, or I would cancel something because an important interview was coming up. And that created, obviously, resentment. I would work when I was not very healthy, maybe even pre-pandemic, expose someone to a cold that they didn't need to be exposed to because I thought they were so important. And then who's not important enough to show up for? And so then it was sometimes like I was feeling like if I didn't show up, that that meant I had decided that you were the person that I could put on a back burner. And I just hated that feeling internally.
Wow.
So now if I'm sick, I'm sick. And I will take that time away, which I rarely do, but I did this week. And if we can reschedule guests, we reschedule them.
That's so relatable to educators, Lori, because I cannot tell you how many people have said, oh, I can't be sick this week. My students are doing X, Y, or Z in class, or semester tests are coming up, or insert whatever big thing is happening in the classroom.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you said that one.
Yeah, everything is important. If you care about your job, everything is important. And I want to talk to every single guest I have. There's no one that I think, well, I didn't really want to talk to that person. You know, I'm all in.
Thank
for
goodness.
Every. Here's one that is controversial. If you want me to do a story on a book, I'm going to read the book. That's my personal relationship with the workload. I have, in the past, occasionally, in serious situations, sat down with someone and said, tell me about your book. But I do not feel good about that at the end of the day. I need to read the book. I need to touch the book and read every page. And that means we don't do as many books as we could. We could really burn through a lot more because authors want to talk. And we want to talk to them. And we like to celebrate South Dakota literature. But if I don't have time to read it, it's going to sit on the pile and it might not get done. And that's just my relationship with an interview. I really like to be prepared. And I don't feel good about not being prepared.
I love that about you. I mean, you could. You could just read summaries and read reviews and do the interview. I'm sure a lot of people do, but I like that.
Yeah. And the other one is, if this is I learned from Gina, if you do this, I will. Then I will do this. If you give me a task at the end of the day, I will take the time that needs to be taken to complete the task because I do not function well at the end. And so if you want me to do something fast, you really should come to me in the morning. I will still take on the task in the afternoon, but it might be a 15-minute task when tomorrow morning it will be a 5-minute task. So I say yes, but then I say that's going to take a minute because my voice is tired, my brain is tired, I'm getting sleepy. Give me a minute. And people usually, I think understand that about me. Judging from the number of things I'm asked to do in the morning.
Yeah.
But knowing, again, research-based, knowing when your best time of focus is, I'm a morning person, I'm going to focus better in the morning, and diminishing returns.
And people who have good boundaries will respect that boundary that you give them.
Yeah.
And if people aren't respecting your boundary, it may be that they don't have good boundaries themselves.
Yeah. At home, I don't make any decisions after 8 o'clock.
I try not to make any big decisions in January or February.
That's a good one.
Both of those are great.
Don't quit your job in February.
No, it's true. You know what? I actually said that to someone the other day. Really, I did.
Yeah, just get through February, whatever it takes. Educators need to take care of themselves. Teacher Talk is here for you. Each one of these conversations is a podcast episode on SDPB's Teacher Talk. It's a podcast that celebrates teachers and education. And of course, more often than not, lessons in the classroom are good lessons for all of us. Find SDPB's Teacher Talk on your favorite podcast platform. Find the companion blogs on our website, sdpb.org/teachertalk. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ari Youngerman and Ellen Kester. I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.